Welcome one and all to episode 97 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox, and with me tonight, our guest host, Deontay Lee of Setting the Edge and numerous other football outlets. Deontay, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me on. This is dope.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been looking forward to this. First, you know, introduce yourself to our listeners. I'm sure a lot of people know who you are, but where they can find your information, your writing, everything you're doing right now.
So this started for me independently. I have a blog called Coverage Check. It's a WordPress site, so that's coveragecheck.wordpress.com. That's kind of where I started doing some of the draft evaluation stuff, kind of asking some questions about the process, trying to figure out, you know, how the community around the draft kind of aligns itself with those who work in front offices, what we get right, what we don't get right. Other than that, I'll do like some film breakdown stuff with Charles and Justice on Setting the Edge. And I just joined Inside the Pylon a few months ago. So I'll be working on the draft guy. I'll be working on the ITP draft guy doing linebackers for them this year.
And you're an actual like football guy and a coach and linebacker coach for a varsity program. Like,
right.
You're an actual football nerd, like not just a guy who watches the tape
and, right.
and then makes some comments. Like you actually do this for a job.
Exactly. I'm pretty intimately involved with this stuff.
So that was one of my reasons I wanted to get Deontay on here. The other reason, about a month ago, he wrote a great piece on Lamar Jackson, quarterback one of the 2018 NFL draft. And it just, you know, it's one of those things where we've seen so much lately because of the prevalence of the spread offense. This idea, this notion that quarterbacks that are athletic can move and play quarterback are one read type guys. And right. Justin and I talked about this quite a bit last year in the process. And the guy that we identified as the one read guy was actually Davis Webb. Like
right.
The Cal quarterback. Yeah. And I think these guys that are able to move, that are able to actually do things, get a bad rap because they're not guys that stand in the pocket, go through three progressions and then check down. Like if after their second progression, they're not there, they're moving. Like they're right. trying to make a play happen. And I think to the football novice, but also to a lot of, you know, guys that don't actually know football intimately from the playing aspect or the coaching aspect, they don't know what they're talking about.
Right. I 100% agree. It's really funny. You know, Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson are both similar in some ways, but they come from different spectrums as far as like evaluating what offenses they're from. Like, it was really interesting with Deshaun Watson because I was always making the argument that I think it was fair that Clemson's offense is a little simple or really kind of trimmed down. But I think a lot of that had to do with tempo. And the argument I was always making with him was once you expand what the offense is capable of on a down-by-down basis, you'll really see what kind of quarterback he is, you know. And it stunk trying to explain that to people. You know, when all I really have to hold up as examples that people will buy into are the Alabama games, you know, but I think that those are really good showings. Anytime they went empty, you know, how many snaps they got off, how much they trusted them in the second half to really work through all the different pressure packages, you know, that showed a different level to his game that people really weren't paying attention to before. And with Lamar Jackson, you know, it's going to be a really interesting case because I think if we're still hearing about how the scheme is tailored to try to hide this guy's weaknesses, despite the fact that Bobby Petrino's a guy that's going to send all five eligible receivers out on routes and leave a quarterback kind of out there to figure it out on his own. You know, if it doesn't work with this kind of multiple West Coast style offense with Bobby Petrino and Lamar Jackson, it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of quarterback prospect anyone's really pleased with as far as what kind of offense they come from and how they operate as a player.
That's one of the things I've found interesting on that I feel like people are missing if they want to kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, if they have a problem with Lamar Jackson, I feel like it's more that we've seen too many successful college quarterbacks under Bobby Petrino fail in the NFL, as opposed to the other arguments that we're seeing made against Lamar Jackson at this point, which is, that would be, if I was somebody that was gonna nitpick that's where I would go first, is like, okay, I want to, Teddy's been good, but we haven't, one, we haven't seen enough of him, and two, there hasn't been another successful, highly thought of, Petrino disciple yet. So that's where it comes down to for me. But when you look at Lamar, and you wrote a great piece, and I think that's the concept that so many people miss, and you kind of broke it down a little bit, but you talk about this multiple look West Coast style offense that Bobby Petrino runs. So it's a variation of the spread, but it's not an air raid. It's not, it's not what Texas Tech is doing. It's not what Cal's doing with Sonny Dykes. It's not any of those things. Like, this is an NFL style offense, but instead of running it out of, 12 personnel or 11 package or anything like that, you're running it out of empty, and you're running it, out of four wide. Like, you're doing it out of different things. And I think a lot of times that gets glossed over when you start with the breakdown of any guy, but especially Lamar Jackson.
And it's funny because I think that that should always be the starting point, especially with quarterbacks, is trying to get a really good understanding for exactly what the offense is asking for it's asking of its signal caller, and with how multiple Louisville is, that's why I'm like, he projects really well. I think if there was any kind of like sim or hold on, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a similar, any kind of like facsimile to that offense, it'd probably be what we see in Kansas City right now,
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. That's the Andy Reid with Alex Smith type offense. Not comparing Smith and Lamar Jackson stylistically, but that's the type of offense you would see, which is why, to me, and we weren't gonna talk about this, but I think we can. To me, a fit would be with Kyle Shanahan, because he's a guy that understands how to tailor an offense to a quarterback, as opposed to trying to fit that square peg in a round hole type of thing.
That's been the team that I've been circling. If there was a dream scenario for Lamar Jackson, would probably be in San Francisco. Talent aside, as far as pairing one head coach with one draft prospect in this upcoming draft, I can't think of a better fit one for the other than with how multiple Kyle Shanahan and how aggressive he wants to be, and with all of the athletic traits and throwing ability of Lamar Jackson.
And I think when you talk about that, that's one of the things that we've seen in recent years. And I don't want to call Jared Goff good now. Like, I'm not, like, I don't think the evaluation's over on him, but he is 100% a better player than he was under whoever the OC was for Jeff Fisher. Like, with Sean McVay there, all of a sudden he looks like a competent NFL quarterback. You look at what the Dallas Cowboys have done with Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott. Like, so much of it does matter to where these guys end up, as opposed to the, what happens with, for instance, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like, for instance, coming to Arizona, like, Bruce Arians is not going to look for a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, a guy that maybe doesn't have the arm to throw those deep outs and those flood routes that he likes to run, where he's asking him to push the ball down the field on 15-yard outs, from the pocket, mind you, not rolling the pocket, not doing anything with the pocket, just straight drop backs and make this throw. And I think that is kind of what the problem is in the NFL at this point, is that there's too many coaches who good enough is probably too strong of a word, but maybe are not comfortable in switching their offensive style in order to best benefit who they have under center.
I totally agree. And it's really funny because we are in an NFL now where there is just more information and more proof that mixing up your offense is what's best for you. You know, we've seen Bill Belichick incorporate the no huddle before. You know, we've seen Gary Kubiak bend to the will of Peyton Manning and incorporate some different, more kind of pro style or spread style elements to his like Shanahan heavy, you know, zone rollout based offense. And it's funny seeing all of these coaches that are still sticking to these really hard line size, talent measurable thresholds. And really missing out on prospects that if they were just willing to bend a little bit, you could make the argument that receiver for receiver, running back for running back, if everybody's healthy, a place like Arizona would be ideal for a guy like Deshaun Watson. And you wouldn't have to worry so much about your offensive line talent with the guy that can move around, you know?
Right. And that's one of the things that, you know, we were talking about before the show. Covering the Cardinals and knowing the Cardinals well, the quarterbacks that we've heard Bruce Arians be high on they're athletic guys, but they're athletic within the pocket type guys. Carson Wentz, yes. You know, Blake Bortles. We haven't seen Paxton Lynch actually play for any amount of time to make a judgment, but
right.
You know, but then they've passed over other guys that don't fit those measurables. And I always go back to 2014 when, you know, we saw on the ESPN draft feature where Blake Bortles' agent said, you know, we know the Cardinals are going to come up and get you if you get past 10 or whatever the pick right. was, 8 or 10. And you know, then Arians after the draft said, you know, there was only one franchise quarterback in this draft and he went before us. Well, you know, it's not hard to see that only one quarterback was taken before their pick at 20, and that was right. Blake Bortles. And you go back to earlier in that draft process, and Arians said, you know, Bortles, Bridgewater, and Manziel walked into the room and only one of them looked like a quarterback. And that goes back to what you said. Too often, it's not about what the player does on the field, but it's what, you know, what the coach thinks they can do with them and what they look like from that. And they kind of miss the entire it almost feels like they missed the entire scouting process because a guy doesn't meet the, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 230 threshold.
Exactly. And then it just turns, like, with your scouting model. Like, at what point is your scouting model not working when you can't look past these measurable thresholds to see that a guy like Teddy Bridgewater coming out of Louisville and a guy like Blake Bortles coming out of UCF aren't even similar to me in terms of resume and ability and proven success. You know, I don't know how you could look at those two and think that Blake Bortles was a quarterback in the room if you were going off of what you saw on tape, at least.
And then that begets the question that, you know, you're an Eagles guy. You went through the Chip Kelly experiment. Did that experiment in the NFL, has that, you know, kind of forsaken the NFL from going to maybe a guy that's willing to go? I mean, you look at the resume of Chip Kelly quarterbacks, and you know there's nothing there about a prototype or anything. I mean, other than Sam Bradford, I don't even feel like he actually went after a quarterback that he liked. I think he just brought in guys and did what he could with them.
I agree with that. And that was always the one thing that I was most kind of floored by with this tenure in Philly, is that he never aggressively sought out to kind of stamp one guy as his dude outside of Sam Bradford, which I think for all things considered, I think he was having at least a decent year before the injury started to catch up with him and he couldn't finish the season. But yeah, I think that, and I think as far as Chip Kelly goes, if that didn't work, in Philly, I can't even think of the next like hot college coach that an NFL team would be interested in, or even a process that Chip, like Chip Kelly's, that they'd be interested in. You know, that it's going to be really hard to convince GMs to lay their neck out on the line for a guy like Chip, you know, or any hot name from college now.
Right. And you know, you think back, and it was, I think it was 99. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like 98 or 99 or even maybe even 2000 when Spurrier went to the Redskins. And then it was, you know, then it was 13, 14, 15 years later before you got, you know, Chip to the Eagles. Yeah, there were other college coaches that went to the NFL, but we're talking offensive geniuses and gurus and things like that that went from college to the NFL. So yeah, I mean, you wonder if and when it'll ever happen again. And I mean, I'm sure it will, but you know, like you said, when and how far down the road is it going to be? Because I mean, even like a Nick Saban, if you get Nick Saban, you're not getting Nick Saban because of his offensive prowess. Like,
right.
and to that, Nick Saban's OCs are mostly NFL guys. So,
right.
So, you know, that is what it is. When you look at this quarterback class, we know about the hyperbole. We know about the hyperbole of Sam Darnold and Josh Allen. Like, these guys coming into the year, you know, who was going to be number one? And we didn't hear much of Lamar Jackson. We didn't hear much of Baker Mayfield. We didn't hear much of the guys that have actually been good in college. And that's not a shot at Darnold and Allen. That's not their fault. They're not the ones putting their names out there. But is it because the NFL and the stereotypes that these guys were getting, you know, pumped up by the media? I know that we were getting the anonymous executive said, you know, right, I think it was Josh Allen, pencil him in at the top of the 2018 draft right after the 17 draft ended. And but is it the media playing into the NFL stereotype when these guys were hyped and now kind of overlooking, still, you know, in my mind, Jackson and Mayfield?
I think so. And I think it kind of works on every side for those guys. For someone like Josh Allen, he comes off of a hot end to the year, a pretty good bowl game. And I think on the scouting side of it, or at least like the draft Twitter type of side of it, we're always kind of looking for like what's next, what people can get ahead of, you know? And I think that we started to see a lot of those stories come out about how Josh Allen's the next guy. And the same kind of deal with Sam Darnold. There's an electrifying Rose Bowl game. Everybody gets excited about that. Now he's a Heisman contender. USC is supposed to be a playoff contender because of his presence. And now people are talking about him being a franchise quarterback, you know, and I think that kind of all of those things, all of those factors kind of play into their profile getting a lot bigger. Whereas with a guy like Baker Mayfield, it's odd to say, because I think that usually we have conversations based on what guys can or can't do or what they have or haven't done. But guys like Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, for whatever reason, have just never had that really large narrative push. You know, Lamar Jackson won the Heisman really not because of a narrative, but because he was kicking people's ass on national television, you know, at least in the beginning of the year, and then he tailed off towards the end. And the same kind of thing with Baker Mayfield. You know, there was really no narrative. They just went out and kicked ass. You know, they're a playoff team. That's just kind of what they were. You never really got a narrative because of it. So I wonder what it is that's kept them from kind of having their profile grow in the same way as those two.
When I watched Jackson, and one of the things that you hit on in your article, but one of the things Justin and I have talked about, you know, kind of probably too much, but something I think is important to note, and a guy like Blake Murphy, who did scouting intern work in the Arena League, has talked about with us, like, one of the things that teams look for, that teams want to see, is improvement from year to year to year. And so when you look at Jackson, you see that improvement from year to year, you know, from the completion percentage to what he's being asked to do, you know, this year more than last year even. And you look at it and you say, okay, that answers a lot of those questions. So then we're getting pushback about size, because I don't think there's as many questions right now about throwing ability or ability to throw the football. You know, because last year I think he was at 55%. That's still, I mean, that's still not good, let's be honest.
Right.
So, you know, to see him up over 63% this year, that's what you want to see. With Mayfield, I feel like people are really afraid to take that chance on a guy that, you know, is he going to be 6 feet tall? What's he weigh? And then does his backyard style of play translate to the NFL? Like, where, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier, what coach is going to allow him to be Baker Mayfield? Because, like, if you try to bring him in and put him into an offense like the Arizona Cardinals, like, is that really going to be successful? Probably not. So, like, who's a coach that's ballsy enough to give him the opportunity to be himself?
Right. Exactly. You know, I was talking to I was tweeting back and forth with John Ledyard about this about a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Darnold, and the point I brought up to him was, I think that what we need to start doing is less about just hard evaluations and more about trying to find fits for guys. Like, I think the greater conversation to have with all of these quarterbacks has more to do with what would be the best case scenario and what would be the worst case. And I think that'll tell us a lot about what they're capable of versus what the NFL is going to be asking these guys to do. Because I 100% agree. If Baker Mayfield ends up in Jacksonville, we can kind of chalk that one up as a failure almost off the rip, because I just can't imagine that Tom Coughlin and the coaching staff there would be comfortable with having a quarterback with his kind of playing style, with the way they want to play football there. You know, on the other hand, you know, if he ends up with a Kyle Shanahan, the same way we had kind of talked about with Lamar Jackson, I can imagine Kyle Shanahan being flexible enough to say, you know, there may be some things I don't like, but the things I do like, I'm very excited about, and I'm willing to kind of mold what the direction we have as a franchise around what we think you can do as a quarterback.
So I took some heat, but I don't really care, because that's half the fun is getting these takes off. But I took some heat for my comment about Darnold on, I think it was Friday night when they played last, when they lost to Washington State, you know, and I called him, and I've said this to Justice and Justin in our group text for, you know, a couple months. Darnold reminds me of Blake Bortles. Like that's who he reminds me of. Like, his highs are really, really high. Like, his highs are really good. But when he's not in rhythm, when he's off, you're like, man, like, what did anybody see in this guy? And he is a nice athlete. Like, he's not going to be a guy that's going to test like as a 4.6 guy. But, you know, he's a guy that can move a little bit and keep plays alive and stuff like that. Now, when you look at like a Josh Allen, if you had to compare him to somebody, who would you compare him to? Because I've seen things, like, I've seen crazy things comparing him to, like, Brett Favre and things like that. And I'm like, all right, I don't understand what you're seeing. So, like, what would you say is a comparison for Allen to you?
This is probably going to sound like an insult, but I feel the same way about him that I felt about Paxton Lynch. And that's really just like, I can't even think of like a starter type guy that I would really kind of align him with. Maybe like the worst of Eli Manning, where some of the throws, some of the misses, he looks so raw, uncomfortable, and kind of outside of his understanding of the offense and where guys are supposed to be, that it really makes me wonder what his process is, what the coaches are asking of him, you know, what his understanding is of what's going on the field. Not to say that he's not a smart football player, that he's not a capable football player, but there are just some things in execution, with feet, with how he uses his own athleticism, you know, the way that he reads the field, the kind of decisions that he makes. It really makes me question sometimes, and he's raw in a lot of ways that remind me about Paxton Lynch.
Yeah. I like that. That's a good one. Cause, like, you know, a lot of people liked Lynch, but they were basing it off of the highs. And I think that's where people get in trouble with quarterbacks. I mean, I've been there myself with Geno Smith. Like you see the best of what a guy can do, and you just try to extrapolate that to saying like, oh, this guy is going to do this every time when he gets to the NFL, because he'll have, you know, quote unquote, better coaching, he'll have better talent around him, all the intangible BS that we come up with to justify our liking of a guy. So yeah, I like that Lynch, because it does make sense. You know, similar thing, like athletic, big, good arm. But yeah, like for 50% of the throws, you're like, whoa, what did you see? Like,
exactly.
So when you look at this class overall, it really is starting to look like Darnold and Allen are going to go back. And I believe they both should. Like, I really do think they both should. So what is this class if it ends up being Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield coming out? Like, is there going to be enough pub, or are we going to get it just like this year's class where people are saying, oh, this is a bad class, don't waste a pick, and then NFL teams like them, and then you get a Deshaun Watson type start from one of these guys? Are we ever going to smarten up from that, or how many years of missing on guys is it going to take before we get it?
I'll just say I don't think that this is a year where that gets fixed. And in fact, I think if I'm a team like San Francisco, maybe I'd be more than happy to see ridiculous negative press clippings come out about those two quarterbacks if they end up being the two lead guys in this class, to see if you can sneak back and maybe get a little bit of extra value on your way to picking those guys. But yeah, I think if those are the two lead guys, I can't imagine that there will be much noise about teams spending top 10, top 5 picks on them, you know, unless a team is absolutely desperate, because I can't think that many – I don't think there's going to be a consensus in the NFL that there are going to be enough teams to where if you're drafting in like the top 8, you feel like you've got to grab that guy right then, or he'll never become available again.
And that's the thing is, you know, again, it's 3 games. We're not going to call a win on Deshaun Watson yet. Right. Just like we're not going to call a loss on Deshaun Kizer yet after, you know, 4 games.
Right.
Although it doesn't look as good in Cleveland as it does in Houston. But
when
you look at that, a lot of the times, and you know, this isn't – I'm not trying to say, like, sources or anything, but, like, a lot of people I spoke with have said that they thought the Houston pick was coming from like the GM and the owner and not Bill O'Brien. Mm-hmm. But what have you seen out of O'Brien through 3 games? Because in that Cincinnati game, he 100% handcuffed Watson. Like, and I'm not going to blame him. It was a short week, his first start on the road on Thursday night. Like, he wasn't about to give him the full expanse of the playbook in game one. But it seems like in New England, and then, of course, this week where they just absolutely blew Tennessee out of the water, that he's kind of changed his work as a quarter, as a coach and play caller.
I would agree. I think that a lot of the design of the offense has kind of started. We're kind of starting to see Bill O'Brien evolve as a coach and as a play caller around what he thinks Deshaun Watson is capable of. And I think if you took the tape from the Cincinnati game and just went game by game, you'll start to see different formations, different personnel packaging, you know, different motions, different kinds of protections and route combinations for him to work with. I was really impressed when I was watching him play Tennessee. I mean, keeping in mind that Tennessee is not, you know, is not a mid-70s Steelers team. You know, we're not talking about the steel curtain defensively. But to see a rookie quarterback, you know, in his third start just cut up a defense like that, and it's not just, you know, look at this guy with this amazing arm throw 60 air yards on verticals to just beat guys one-on-one. It was within designs of plays, whether he's in or out of the pocket. he was really punishing almost everything Tennessee ran as a defense. And that's when I kind of – and I really kind of took note of the fact that Bill O'Brien was really leaving a lot more on Deshaun Watson's plate, and he responded really well. So now I'm extremely excited to see just how much more of an expanded offense Bill O'Brien is willing to give him, because I think that they actually have the personnel to do something that will be a little similar to what, like, a Kansas City is doing, even if it's not exactly that. I that was kind of the situation that I wanted – to see Deshaun Watson in most, you know, because I think that he and Alex Smith are actually kind of comparable, even despite, and it all kind of depends on what you think Deshaun Watson's ceiling will ultimately be.
Before we get out of here, why don't you remind everybody where they can find you on Twitter and your work?
So my Twitter handle is DeontayLee_. You can find me there. I'm usually contributing to Inside the Pylon or SettingEdge.com, so you can check me out wherever you find Chuck and Justice. So I'm sure all of your listeners are familiar with those two.
We had a fire Justice, because, you know, Chuck can attest to this. He calls out a lot. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so you can find me with those two guys. Other than that, man, I'm usually just on Twitter just getting these takes off like everybody else, man.
That's right. We're just out here having fun. So I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with me for a little bit, talking about this quarterback, talking about NFL stuff, college stuff. Like, I love picking your brain. Follow Deontay on Twitter. Find his work whenever he puts it out there. You'll become a smarter football fan for listening to the things he says. So I appreciate it. Thanks, as always, for listening. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on SoundCloud. We're part of Blog Talk Radio and Stitcher Radio. So anywhere they play podcasts, find us and check us out. I'll be back next week with Justin. Maybe he'll be back from his vacation. Who knows? So, but thanks, as always, for listening. And Deontay, I really appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you having me on, man.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.